What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 141, and today we're continuing our series on COVID and the vaccine and all the data behind that. And today we're going to specifically talk about the vaccine safety data. So I'm sure everyone by now has heard about that 90%+ safety, efficacy, and efficiency for the vaccine. So we want to touch on how they get that data, what that data means, and if it's even legit or not. And this is really the kind of the genesis of the podcast. I mentioned about that last week as well, just because I knew this data they were reporting, you know, that 90%+ was basically BS. It's like pharmaceutical industry mumbo jumbo. But it sounds really good when, you know, Fox News, ABC, whatever your nightly news that you like to watch says that a vaccine is, you know, 90%+ effective. That sounds very, very good. But I knew that number was BS just because that's what the pharmaceutical industry does. And they did the exact same thing with statins. So the national emergency back then was heart attacks. And Pfizer got on the fast track with statins. And the same thing happened with the COVID vaccine. And obviously the national emergency now was a pandemic and all that stuff. So they got on the fast track and they used something called the emergency use authorization. And this fast tracks the drug and allows it to bypass certain restrictions. Because normally getting stuff approved by the FDA should be fairly difficult for obvious reasons. You know, you don't want to have these random drugs out there that eventually kill a bunch of people. But using their emergency use authorization, like, passes, basically, they allow them just to get away with some crazy stuff.
Yeah, so what it allows is you can produce the vaccine and test the vaccine at the same time. Whereas normal approval, you test it, then it gets approved, and then you mass produce it. Well, what that extra time allows is if there are some more like side effects that weren't like short term but are long term side effects, those long term side effects can pop up, and somewhere in between like the testing, the approval, and the production, like, oh hey, like the FDA can catch some stuff if there are some like long term side effects that wouldn't have popped up in the short term. So that's kind of like the main difference between like the normal FDA approval versus the emergency use. The emergency use system won't really catch those long-term effects until it's a little kind of too late.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's a really good explanation of it. And I guess I wanted to start with the intro. It's just saying we're not anti-vaxxers. We're not saying this is a huge conspiracy. I'm not trying to say the vaccine is, you know, putting a microchip in people and controlling their minds. We're not saying any of that stuff.
It's not making people magnetic.
Yeah, it's not making people magnetic. It's not giving people superpowers. Nothing like that. It's just really about informed consent. It's what I've always said. I said that in the first episode too. So I just really think people should get both sides of the argument. They should be presented with all the data. Like, I trust that a lot of people out there are smart enough to make decisions for themselves if they're presented with all the data. That's the only reason why we're doing this. And a lot of it's going to come off as negative. And that's simply because, well, it's real numbers. But the national narrative has been one-sided. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. And it's also, we're supposed to trust like some of the most untrustworthy companies like out there. It's like they've lied to us like a million times. So why should we trust them on the millionth and first time?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice. No. What is it? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. So these people,
I got it, right?
Yeah. So, and these people have fooled us time and time again. So that's the only reason why we're doing this series. I just want to present all the data and then you make the decisions for yourself. And this goes to everyone that listens to this, all the people in my circle, all the people in Tom's circle. That's why we're doing this. And yeah, basically to start, like I said, I'm sure you've seen that 90% plus efficacy for the vaccines. And people interpret this as it's being very safe and it will prevent you from getting COVID. And this isn't true. This 90% number is a relative risk reduction, not the absolute risk reduction. This is mathematical wizardry used by the pharmaceutical industry to make their drugs look better than what they really are. And again, we talked about this in the Statin podcast, so if you want some reinforcements, go listen to that. But the absolute risk reduction measures for the vaccines were 0.7% and 1.1% for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. And these are much lower than the reported relative risk reduction. The absolute risk reduction measures were not reported. You had to go in and get these numbers yourself from the overall data Pfizer and Moderna gave. And that should be a huge red flag for everyone. Because just think of emotionally, if something says, hey, this is 90% safe. You're like, damn, okay, that's pretty good. That's an A in a normal like grading class. But what if I said, oh, never mind, it's 0.7% safe. Those couldn't be farther, you know, on the scale, farther apart.
So you mean to tell me that a pharmaceutical company is overstating the benefits of their drug?
Basically, yeah, basically. I know.
I mean, it seems like they've been doing that, I don't know, as long as I can remember.
Yeah, forever. I mean, that's their MO. It's what they're supposed to do. They're just trying to make money, and that's how you do it, right? But,
of course.
But like I said, people should know this information. Like, I don't care what you choose, but at the very least, you should be informed. So now I want to go through how you actually get these numbers. It's going to get a little confusing just because presenting math over a podcast is like not the ideal form. Obviously, it'd be better like on a whiteboard or something, but just try and follow along and hopefully you get the gist of it. So let's just see in this example, the vaccine and placebo groups each have 100 randomly assigned individuals with no history of infection, and an event is defined as the incidence of infection among all individuals during the course of the trial. The percentage of events in the vaccine group is the experimental event rate, so the EER. In this example, let's say it's 1%, so it's one person out of 100. And the percentage of events in the placebo group is the controlled event rate, so the CER. And remember, the placebo group is just people who are not vaccinated. And 2 out of 100 is 2%. So in this example, the absolute risk reduction is the disease risk difference between those two numbers. So between the placebo group and the vaccine group. So this is basically 2% minus 1%, which is 1%. That would be the absolute risk reduction in this example. The relative risk reduction, or also known as the vaccine efficacy, which is a number that is commonly reported in the news, is the reduced risk from vaccination. And this is the AAR, so the absolute risk reduction, divided by the CER, which is controlled event rate. So in this example, you get 1% divided by 2%, which equals 50%. So you see, just by manipulating the exact same numbers, they get an absolute risk reduction of 1% to turn into a vaccine efficacy of 50%. They just basically exploded that number and made it look way more impressive than what it really is.
Yeah, and when you actually hear like the news reports on it, they never discuss whether they're talking about absolute risk or relative risk. I barely ever heard that. I would just hear the risk reduction is this much.
Yep, exactly. And honestly, a part of me understands why they don't present data in this way, because it is confusing. Like, you really do need to have a general, I don't know, you have to be somewhat comfortable with math. And I know not a lot of people are. Like, a lot of people
nobody's good with statistics. Like, I know. Nobody understands what those numbers mean or anything like that.
But that's
like,
how they get away with it. Yeah. like having people be uncomfortable with math, having people just like seeing numbers and their eyes kind of go blank. That's how these companies get away with presenting shady and just honestly wrong numbers. But omitting the absolute risk reduction findings in like the public health and clinical reports of vaccine efficacy is an example of outcome reporting bias, which ignores unfavorable outcomes and misleads the public's impression and scientific understanding of a treatment's efficacy and benefits. So informed consent requires that patients are educated about the risks and benefits of a healthcare procedure or interventions. Omitting this data is the exact opposite of informed consent. And I know, like, I know most people out there, well, I don't know, because the COVID is kind of like political, so some people don't think it's polite to talk about politics, and I honestly probably agree with that just because it can go south real quick. But I'm sure Tom has an example of talking to people and they see these numbers and they kind of just, it confuses them and it makes them think they understand the science when I'm like, man, you really don't understand the numbers they're presenting to you. Like, it's just not true.
Barely anybody understands what you just laid out, the absolute risk versus the relative risk. Like, not too many people really understand that. And when you just break it down, like something's like 90% effective, well, it's like, does that just mean they dropped it from 2% to 1%? Because that means it's only 1% really effective.
Exactly.
Like that's such a, I don't know, it just makes like the risk seem so much bigger or such a better benefit than what it really is.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very true.
And not enough people really understand that. And I mean, it's not like me and you can talk about this because like how long have we known about this? Like the difference, like a
not
few
long.
Years?
Yeah, not long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you said this to me 5 years ago, I'd have been clueless too.
Yep. Yeah, no, exactly. And honestly, if you come and talk to me about it today, I'm sure I'll stumble through my words because I'm honestly not the best at math. Like, I'm half decent at it. I guess I went all the way through calculus, but that's still not that high, you know, compared to what a lot of people do with mathematics. And I don't know. I just think, like, when the manufacturers, so Pfizer and Moderna, and I guess Johnson & Johnson, too, they're the three big vaccines, at least in America, them failing to report absolute risk reduction measures in at least the publicly released documents, and the FDA advisory committee did not follow FDA published guidelines for communicating risk and benefits to the public, and the committee failed to report absolute risk reduction measures in authorizing the vaccines for emergency use. So nobody really followed the guidelines they were supposed to with the vaccine. And I think a lot of it was, we can't muddy up the waters. We can't have any sort of negative press when it comes to that vaccine. We just need to get it out there. So anything that could be interpreted as a negative, anything that could be interpreted as a downside to the vaccine, they just did not publish. They did not talk about it. And they just wanted to get out there as fast as possible.
Yeah, it's the AstraZeneca one still hasn't even been approved for use in the United States. I don't think they've really announced like clearly why that is, even though they've approved it in other countries.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah.
I think it has something to do with the clotting issue, but that hasn't been like clearly stated anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, most likely, I mean, the clotting factor, we covered that in the first episode, is very obvious how this vaccine, any one of the vaccines, can cause clots because it produces the spike protein and the spike protein itself causes clots. So if you want to learn more about why the vaccine can cause rare clotting issues, just listen to the first episode. But reporting bias, which is what's been going on, like I said, it misleads and it distorts the public's interpretation of the COVID vaccine efficacy, and it violates the ethical and legal obligations of informed consent. I feel like I'm the only one who takes this serious, but I think it's very serious. And this may not seem like a big deal, but misleading the public and fluffing data to make drugs appear safe has killed thousands of people in the past. And this is a very common tactic, but it hasn't been done on this scale before. Everyone on Earth is being pushed to take this vaccine. There are going to be some consequences from this. We may never hear about them, but they will be out there. And we may not hear about it because it's going to be very hard to connect the side effects that people suffer to the vaccine. Because side effects are going to be clot related. Clots are very common, like DVTs, clots in the deep veins, heart attacks, strokes. All these have like clotting components. and the resulting blockages from that. And those are just very, very common conditions. So no one's going to really link a stroke to the vaccine, but the mechanism is there.
Well, you're talking about heart attacks and strokes. Those are two of the top 10 killers in our country.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's always a high rate of those. So I don't know if we really noticed too much of an uptick in those because they're already so high.
Yeah, exactly. And it'd only take, you know, a few percent uptick in either of those conditions to result in thousands of deaths. It wouldn't just be a couple people. It'd be hundreds of thousands of people. To give one good example of how just the misrepresentation of data and the pharmaceutical industry spinning things has resulted in hundreds of thousands of deaths, I want to give an example of this. So, and it honestly shows there's real hard, just a very difficult time like disentangling cause and effect, especially when you look at very common events. Like Tom said, strokes and heart attacks are very common. So a few years ago, Merck launched a drug called Vioxx. And Vioxx is an anti-inflammatory, similar to like an ibuprofen. And needless to say, it did not go well. But to increase the likelihood of FDA approval for its anti-inflammatory drug, the pharmaceutical giant Merck used flawed methodologies based towards predetermined results to exaggerate the drug's positive effects. And internal documents made public in litigation, because this only came into light because they got sued, revealed that a Merck marketing team had developed a strategy called Advantage to skew the results of clinical trials in the drug's favor. As a part of the strategy, scientists manipulated the trial design by comparing the drug naproxen, which is a pain reliever, sold under the name as of Aleve, usually. And so it compared that drug, the new one, Vioxx, to Aleve rather than a placebo. And the scientists highlighted the results that naproxen decreased the risk of heart attack by 80% and downplayed results showing that Vioxx increased the risk of heart attack by 400%. And this misleading presentation of the evidence made it look like naproxen was protecting patients from heart attacks and that Vioxx only looked risky by comparison. But in fact, Vioxx has since been found to significantly increase cardiovascular risk, leading Merck to withdraw the product from the market in 2004. But guess what? It's too late by then. That manipulation and the resulting FDA approval in 1999 led to thousands of avoidable premature deaths and 100,000 heart attacks. 100,000. This is not a small number. This affected a lot of people all over the world. And really the point I want to highlight from this story is that it is estimated that Vioxx caused 100,000 additional heart attacks in the United States alone, and nobody noticed. No one. This figure was only worked out when the researchers analyzed the figures on increased risk that had been seen in clinical trials, at least the figures that were finally seen when Merck was forced to release the data. And you may think, how could 100,000 heart attacks simply be missed? Well, they are very common, honestly. And let's just say, let's go through some of the numbers. We have 1 million physicians in the U.S. If heart attacks caused by Vioxx were evenly distributed, only 1 in 5 physicians would have seen anyone suffer because of taking Vioxx. In those physicians that did not see 1 or 2, would they have made the connection? No, they would not. Not in a million years. There would not be even there wouldn't be recorded of any possible connections made. Like if they go in, an elderly person has a stroke or a heart attack, the elderly person took Vioxx, and who cares? So what? They're not going to do that. Connecting those dots would basically be impossible. So you have to take this information and your health into your own hands. Don't wait for the establishment and your doctor to do it for you, because most likely they won't.
Honestly, these pharmaceutical companies have way too much power. They're always overstating the benefits, always understating the risks. They've been doing that for the longest time. Most likely, they're doing it in this scenario as well. So that's like, it's really hard to trust them.
Very hard to trust them. And like I said, I'm not telling people not to get the vaccine. I just want to report the data that's actually out there. So an absolute risk reduction, basically of around 1%. So you have to measure that with your risk of any sort of side effect from the vaccine. And to trust the data from pharmaceutical industry is just risky because they've done this in the past. They basically have the FDA in their pockets And we all know the industry is corrupt. It's corrupt to the bone. Listen to the statin series again, because we go through that way more in detail in the statin series, because I think the statin industry and statins, I said that a million times, if you don't know, they're just a drug that doctors will give you to lower your cholesterol. And they're honestly probably the biggest scam in medicine. But that whole industry has just highlighted how corrupt this whole system is and how most of these people are bought off. And I get it. Someone comes to you for $1 million and say, hey, look the other way. Most people are going to look the other way. We're human at the end of the day. But a lot of deaths have occurred because of shady, shady practices. And is this one of them going on now? I don't know. You know, is the vaccine eventually going to kill everybody? I doubt it. But they're not being 100% transparent with the data, and I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you. I'm in that, like, wait-and-see camp. Mm-hmm. Like, am I against it? No. Am I for it? No. I'm just like, let me see some more data. Let me see some more published side effects and stuff like that, and, like, really take a closer look. Because, like, right now, it's just kind of... it's too early to really be making a decision like that that could impact you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
If you're at high risk for COVID, like you might have serious complications if you were to get it, then understand taking the vaccine. But if you're a low risk person, like you might want to think twice about it and just kind of like wait for some more data.
Yeah, exactly. I just think someone that's young, your odds of COVID killing you if you're young and healthy, and I understand that's not the biggest group of people these days. Not too many people are healthy, even if you, their outside exterior, you know, visually might be deceiving. It's just,
I mean, it's 12% is metabolically healthy.
Yeah, we've done a podcast on that. 88% of Americans are unhealthy. And honestly, it's probably true if you just look around. But COVID's not going to really kill you if you're half young and half healthy. That's a fact. All right, the data is out there. But... and we mentioned this already in another episode. What if, you know, you're 22, you get the vaccine, everything's good, you're an athlete, but you didn't know you had kind of an underlying autoimmune issue that, well, you were prone to clots, you didn't know. And this triggers the vaccine triggers some whole, honestly, terrible reaction in your body and you die. I don't know. For that happens to one or two people, like nationally, that's not going to be a story. But to those one or two people's family, that's going to be devastating. And I think... breaking this down into the individual and individual stories that this vaccine will affect, either pro or con, I think sheds a different light on the story, you know, rather than just looking at these real big, broad numbers. So next week, we'll talk about asymptomatic spread and why that, I don't know, how that kind of entrenched policy, as far as, especially in the United States, California for sure, how that kind of made shutting down and lockdowns, or at least that's how they justified it. You know, they said they convinced healthy people that they were sick, which is honestly the craziest shit I think on the planet. But we'll talk about that next week and how asymptomatic spread really isn't the biggest driver of any virus ever. And COVID is not that different. So if you want to learn more, yeah, just check out the podcast next week. You can also go to the website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com. I'll link the same papers I read for last week's podcast. So if you want to read all those, you can, and just get informed. You can find everything on tntwellnessandnutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.